Consequence Podcast Network.
Tour set pop.
Bora Hey, Iconic Army.
Bora Hey.
Welcome to part two of our D-Day album review.
Yeah.
We left off with the emotional turn of Amygdala, and we're so excited to dive into the passionate emotions of the rest of the album.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Welcome back. We're your hosts. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany. And this is Standing BTS,
your favorite informative fangirl podcast.
All right. Today, we're going to hang out for about an hour and talk about the second half of D-Day. So we're going to be talking about SDL, Polar Night, Interlude Dawn, Snooze, Life Goes On. And then we previously covered People Part 2 when the music video came out in the original release. So we're going to be getting into lyrics, production, just our overall connections and feelings about these songs.
Yeah. Before we get into today's episode, we want to say thanks, Iconics, for being here and for all of your support. If you'd like to support us even further and have access to our episode documents, our monthly virtual Iconic Hangouts, and our sound checks, please consider joining us on Patreon at patreon.com/standingbts.
Or if you'd like, you can make a one-time donation at paypal.me/standingbtspodcast. Your support helps us to improve the quality of our content and to continue putting out bi-weekly episodes, but any type of support is super appreciated. Thank you all for being here and for listening. Yeah,
thanks so much. So our charity of the month for May, first of all, there's so many causes happening in May. May is so busy and so many things that are worth our attention. But something that we've never drawn attention to on the podcast before is Skin Cancer Awareness Month. And you know what? You need to wear your sunscreen.
Wear your sunscreen.
Like, yes. My sister-in-law, honestly, is the one who got me on this, but she's a Florida native, and she talks about and is a huge advocate for how common skin cancer is, how much you need to wear your sunscreen, even if it's cloudy, even if it's super overcast. You need to wear your sunscreen.
It's anti-aging.
I mean, truthfully, if you want to look young forever.
Yeah.
Like BTS, okay. Then wear your sunscreen.
Wear your sunscreen, though.
So
yeah,
seriously,
this
month of May is Skin Cancer Awareness Month, and so spread awareness by first of all checking yourself for any suspicious moles or spots, getting them checked out by a doctor, encouraging your friends and family to do so, and also preventing the most common form of cancer by taking these preventative measures of wearing your sunscreen and other protective clothing like hats or sunglasses when out in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So very important. Take care of the largest organ on your body, your skin.
Yes, it is the largest organ. Yeah. So definitely take care of it. So if you want to support this cause, you can find out more about preventing skin cancer and to help spread awareness. You can visit the Skin Cancer Foundation at skincancer.org.
Yeah.
Also, if you want to donate or support another cause this month, it's also Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. It's also Mental Health Awareness Month too. We've supported these causes in the previous years of this podcast, but we just wanted to bring a new cause for this month of May.
Yeah.
The sun's coming out, so
it's gonna
protect your skin.
Summer soon. Protect your skin, but definitely support those causes as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's get into the album.
Let's do it. Oh my God.
We're starting off with SDL. So for the production of SDL, it was written and produced by Auguste and El Capitan. This song has a more mid-tempoed R&B beat. There's a little bit of trap mixed in too. It's not really slow necessarily, but it's very mid-tempoed. It's not fast. It's not a heavy hitter like D-Day or anything like that. It's just this very sonically lovely song. There's these hi-hat claps. There's a staccato keyboard that has these notes playing. There's a passionate rock guitar that's strumming throughout. And of course, I think the highlight of the song, or one of the highlights, is Adora's backing vocals.
Oh yeah,
it's so euphoric how she sounds. The song just has this very blissful feel to it.
Yeah, her background vocals really contribute to the R&B vibe of the song. Mm-hmm. And I just love how, like, we know that People Part Two comes next on the album, and how People Part Two has the IU feature mm-hmm. with that very R&B female vocal feature. So I just feel like
it's a very smooth transition. It's between a smooth transition. Two.
It's mm-hmm. a smart time to bring in some female backing in the album, and in the song itself, it sounds so lovely.
It is.
We love to hear Adora anytime. We think that she's amazing.
Yeah,
so.
I love that she's on this album. And this song, truthfully, like, I feel that it's the soundtrack to the most perfect, sunny, beautiful day.
Yeah.
All good vibes when you listen to this song.
All good vibes. Actually, my husband Jordan has definitely declared that this is the best song on the album.
It's such a bold statement.
I
wouldn't expect it from him.
It was only after the second time listening through the album with him also, but mm-hmm. he just says that sonically it's the best song. He loves how it's produced, and he mm-hmm. thinks that it is such a vibe. It's one of those you could hit repeat forever and ever.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it is beautifully produced. Yeah.
So let's go ahead and dive into the lyrics of this wonderful song. I want to start by talking about the first verse. And really what I felt the first verse was overall about is not taking love for granted. Mm-hmm. The song being Somebody Does Love, he starts us off by making us think about who is that somebody? Who are we loving, or how are we experiencing love? So he asks us some questions like, who do you love? Like asking you who it is that you think of, who do you live for or smile for? And who is it that you cry for? And that he's mentioning that it's only love that you would cry for, that you would have these grand emotions for. And so he's asking us all of these questions to put us in the present moment, and also cause us to reflect on who we are and how we love.
Yeah, I love that he does this in the first verse. It really sets the stage, really makes you contemplate about who you do love and who loves you, and just the true meaning of the word love. Like, it's not a word that is always thrown around lightly, that, there's a real heavy, deep meaning to who it is that we love and the people we care about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he reminds us that we can't forget about it.
We can't take it for granted.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's easy to be complacent with it. But mm-hmm. yeah, we really cannot take it for granted, I think, is his main message here in the first verse.
Yeah, which kind of gets us into the second verse. And the second verse, he's talking a little bit more about a love that maybe is fading a little bit. He's really talking a lot about how human relationships really are difficult, and that we don't always get what we want from it, or things don't go the way that we plan. And what I really love about in the second verse is how he talks about the memories of a past relationship or something, saying that memories are bound to be glamorized. See, they're already faint. And it just really made me think about some of my friendships that I've had, or past loves that I've had, where I feel that especially in the moment where I felt like we were growing apart or we were changing or anything like that, I would hold on to those memories, and I would just put them on a pedestal and be like, oh, but we're, this love, our friendship is so great. And instead of growing with it or changing with how the friendship was reconstructing or developing and growing, I was trying to hold on to that past, the memories of the past and how the friendship was or something. So that was really my friendship with my really good friend from kindergarten.
Yeah.
We've been lifelong friends. And so as we got into middle school, of course we're changing, mm-hmm. we're making other friends, we're learning more about ourselves and our just as individuals. But for me, that was the first time I really had experienced how people change and how I'm changing, and that, obviously we're still friends to this day, best friends.
Yeah.
But it just, of course, our friendship just kind of changed, and I had to adapt to that. But I remember thinking so much about just those memories. I really was bound to glamorize those moments.
Yeah. I think the line that really sticks out in relation to that is the Would it be you of the past that I'm missing? And when you were idolizing those memories that you guys had built up before going to middle school and how great your friendship was all of that time, and now you had, you know, at that time had felt like you were growing apart, would she even be the same? Would you be the same? Like, would you be this, you know, would you still get along and would you still share that? And I think that that's just like this wonderful question about love here, you know, wondering if you can come back together, and then like knowing here with your story, with your friend, like, yes, you have, and you were able to grow and change together. And your love that you share as friends was able to do that as well over time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just love also that he is saying that memories are bound to be glamorized, because I often do not glamorize my memories. Like, I find myself all the time thinking back to something, even if right after it happened, I felt like it was incredible, amazing, the best thing ever. Every time I think back to it, I am like putting all of these like negative thoughts on it, or like picking myself apart in the situation and like being hypercritical. And then I'll just like paint myself in my own memory in such a negative light, or make up mistakes or like problems or something that like really weren't there or really didn't happen. And so like I tend to do the opposite to memories.
Which is crazy.
I know.
But he talks about that in this second verse. You know, he shows both sides of like glamorizing the memories, but also feeling feelings of regret or lingering feelings that are still there.
Saying that human relationships are really difficult, you know? And yeah, like I feel that. And I think in relations to like love, like you kind of brought up like past romantic relationships, you know, even like those, like I never thought back on them fondly after they ended, 'cause I just like felt so bad that they ended, you know?
Yeah.
So it was hard for me, you know, it's hard for me to like glamorize those, those memories. But the really,
I'm such a nostalgic person though.
I know.
Like I really glamorize them.
And I think when you put it in that perspective for me, like thinking about it from a nostalgic way, or like even those friendships from a nostalgic way, like, of like, I feel the love for that, you know? And I think the important thing here is that it's the love that's lasting and the love that is genuine, that you're going to feel those warmer memories about, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, verse 2 was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in verse 3, I just have to say at the beginning, he has some very like BTS Army coded lyrics. Like, I cannot read them anyway, but because he says, it also, it's a beautiful analogy, but he says, love is like sunlight pouring down on a spring day and rolls in as the winter sea fierce waves before we know it. And so I just love like this, like love permeates all things, you know, like it's this unstoppable force is this imagery that we're getting. But of course, the mention of spring day or of winter or even of the sea and the waves, all of those things give BTS imagery.
Oh, yeah. BTS Army. For sure.
For sure. Like that connection, that everlasting bond feeling.
And what's so special here, too, at the third verse is that the last two lines of the third verse are almost the same as the last two lines of the second verse, but he changes it to have a much more optimistic outlook. He says, would it be the past times that we're reminiscing about, or would it be each other of the past smiling in those memories? So instead of like looking back on those memories and feeling any kind of regret or lingering feelings, he's saying here, like, we're smiling in those memories and those moments. And I just feel like it's so beautiful. And in the chorus, he says over and over again of like, somebody does love you. And he's clearly in this song talking about like the love that he has, the people that he loves in his life.
Yeah. And that everybody has someone who loves them.
I'm thinking about you.
Yeah.
You. Mm. I feel like he's thinking about me.
Yeah, that's what I feel too. Yeah.
He loves Army so much.
It's very reassuring as a as the listener too. It's a comforting song.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I really love SDL.
I do too.
And I loved when we first got the track list of like wondering, what is SDL? What is SDL?
Yeah.
And the fact that it's Somebody Does Love, like what an amazing theme too.
Mm-hmm.
And of course he carried the theme of love into People Part Two, which as you, Bethany said at the top of the episode, we already talked about a couple episodes ago, the entire production lyrics and music video for People Part Two when it dropped as a pre-release track.
Mm-hmm.
But that song really was all about love. And if Yoongi himself is deserving of love, or as we as people, as complex human beings who are both good and bad,
mm-hmm.
How we experience love, how we give and show and receive, and if we're capable and able, and all of those deep questions about how love and people relate. And so we love its placement here on the album coming after SDL.
Yeah.
We think that it flows really,
really
well.
These songs really go hand in hand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they really go. And like I mentioned, the IU feature earlier, like those vocals really pair up and the R&B vibes, you know, the similar R&B vibes of the two songs. So it's this nice little like love moment on the album.
It is. Yeah. He has a whole section dedicated to love here.
Yeah.
All right, so the next song we're going to talk about is Polar Night. So production for this, produced and written by Agusti and El Capitan, like the majority of this album. There is a song that is sampled in Polar Night. And so we got this translation from Dual Set. And so in the D-Day Live that Suga did, he mentioned that he started writing this song as he was turning 30 in Korean age, which reminded him of the song Around 30 by Kim Kwon-sok. And so he sampled and reconstructed the guitar instrument of Around 30, upon which he built other layers. And so we also have Kang Sung-woo as the composer and lyricist of that original song. So it's just interesting to see that he was turning 30 and he thought of this song and thought, hey, I'm going to go ahead and sample it in Polar Night.
Yeah.
I just think it's really neat that we know the sample.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that we know the sample because normally we are just left wondering or we have to search endlessly.
Like, what is that? It sounds so familiar.
Yeah, so thank you, Min Yoongi.
Yes, thank you, Min Yoongi. Yeah. Okay. So this song, it really stood out to me first time listening through. And I think it's because of the intensity of this song. Like he's rapping so fast and so like intently and passionately, but it's over this slow beat. So like, it's just like a real slow, simple hip hop beat, you know, it's got a slow drum beat. There's this soulful guitar and piano that you can hear in the background, that guitar coming from Around 30, that sample.
Yeah.
But it just, the contrast between the slow beat and the fast rap, it just really stands out.
I feel like some of the best rap songs are this type of dynamic, like this fast rap over this slow beat, because it's really like the rap laid bare. Like this is what it is, what you're here for, to hear what they have to say. It gives a little bit of that like leaning poetry slam vibe because of the, you know, like the rap being so forefront and like such standout over the slower instrumental. I also just love this kind of like I just think it's iconic. Like, I think the best rappers do this type of thing, you know, and he really delivers it so well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In his voice, you hear these tones of disgust and disdain, but it's a great listen regardless of that. Like, but you can really hear this like disgust in his voice.
Yeah. I mean, it made me immediately want to figure out what he's talking about.
What is he
here.
Saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and get into the lyrics. And I just have to praise this intro so much. I don't know what it was like during research. I'm like, wait, Kayla, go back. Like, let's listen again.
Mm-hmm.
Because right at the beginning, he says, between countless truths and countless lies, are we looking at the world the proper way? And Kayla, you said that this really sounds like his thesis statement for song.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's such a strong introduction, but I love how he wraps this part of the song. Like, because of that slow beat, he's rapping very much in rhythm and beat to the slow beat. And it sounds like he's counting us in. It, just like a music, you know, like a dance instructor's like 1, 2, 3, and 4. Like, right. Or, you know, like a music teacher.
Yeah.
Like, it feels very much that way in how he's rapping it. And so he lays it very clearly, this thesis statement here. Like, he's walking us in and leading us in. And then he just slaps us with this really fast rap into getting into the first verse.
Yeah. It's a great whiplash.
It is. It really prepares us for this song, but I just think it's very clever.
It's so clever. And it makes that main statement, the thesis statement of the song, really stand out because he delivers that so clearly, so directly at the beginning that then he, in the entire song, just dives into that whole topic.
Yeah. The topic. It's genius.
Yeah, it's so genius. It's Minyoungi genius.
Yeah.
So let's get into his first verse. At the beginning, he's talking about, he says, the gap between instigation and fundamental nature. What is it that I'm gaining? For I can't live like shit in this shitty world. And I feel like right here, like, I really relate to this because I think he's talking about that he's about to stand up and speak out for something and there might be backlash. But if he's not doing this, like, what else is he going to do? Like, he's just going to continue to live in this place that he thinks could be improved and not improve it, not try to add to it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way. Like, I, you know, very much like advocate for things that I'm passionate about. And it's hard for me to sit idly by and not say anything.
Yeah, just take it or accept it.
And just accept it. Yeah. But the question of what is it that I'm gaining? Because you really don't get anything out of advocating for things. You more so get backlash. I mean, you might make a little bit of progress, or like if you join a movement and together you all can make a progress 100%. But as an individual standing out alone, like, it's very, very challenging.
It is challenging.
And thinking about him but here in his position,
I think he's saying there's not much to gain if you're living between that, if you're not doing something.
Yeah. At the same time. Totally. Yeah. He says, killing anyone not on the same side is what today's justice is. Left and right, black and white, at the end of this is scripted play. The audience rips each other apart and draws blood. A war without gunshots. And so I just feel like, I mean, here he's talking about, this is where we really understand the title of the song, Polar Night. He's talking about extremism, extreme views, this left and right, these polar opposites, right? These polarized views, and how people are going to be so easily vilified regardless of their viewpoint, and that's the, you know, quote unquote, today's justice.
Yeah. I also love that he says in this scripted play, like, this black and white, this left and right, like, this is someone has created this. This has been created so that the audience, like most of us, like regular, like just every like 9-to-5 job day people, that we're the audience and that we're ripping each other apart of this scripted play of like creating this polarization.
Right.
And like we're the victims of it. We're falling into it.
Totally. Yeah. And distracting us from what really matters, right? Distracting us from like things that like we could actually be working on, like world hunger or, you know, like things like that, that are definitely things that could be conquered. But because we are all so concerned about these other, like, just because we're all concerned about these other exaggerated issues that have become so polarized, you know, we can't focus on what actually needs to get done.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's a distraction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's really calling attention to that here.
He is. Yeah. At the end of this verse, he says, the extreme choice of making anyone and everyone an enemy, if not on the same side. And I really like the word choice here of the extreme choice. Like, if you really think about it, we're not going to agree on everything. And I also think it's very weird that it's either black or white, it's right or left. Like, you have to be so extreme one way or the other. And it just doesn't make sense that people would be one way or the other all the time. That's just not realistic. And he's saying that, like, how extreme it is that if someone has a different view from you, to be immediately enemies. Like, that's just so extreme.
Right.
And picking one side or the other is very extreme too.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. To not even think that you could maybe find some common ground, some common interests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the pre-chorus is a heavy hitter too. He's really just talking about how everyone has their own ideologies. Everyone has their own differences here. The first line he says, even political correctness is assessed according to one's taste. Political correctness, like, I used to think that this is more of like those universal political correctness that like, oh, that's not politically correct. But he's here saying like, actually, like, it's up to one's taste. Like, it's basically where you're from, your upbringing, your ideologies, you know, that can decide whether you think it is or isn't politically correct. Like, that's being assessed by someone's own taste too.
Right. Right. And then, yeah. I mean,
it's a term that is used as if it is universal. Though.
Right. As if everyone knows exactly
correct.
What that is, what right. that line is, or if everyone believes the same line shouldn't be crossed. You know, mm-hmm. I think like societies overall make societal norms about that. But I still think that within those, there's a lot of debate and discussion that people have.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he goes on to say in the pre-chorus, even truths and lies are assessed according to one's taste. Perspectives are brought from within one's ideological ground. So this is what you were just talking about, mm-hmm. like what you are, what, how you grow up, you know, your family style, your background, your culture that you like live in. If do you live in a city? Do you live, you know, like what part of the country do you live in? Like mm-hmm. all of that's going to contribute your education to who you are, yeah. who you become. And all of that is going to inform your own unique perspective and worldview, even unique to like likely your family. You will still have some elements of your worldview that is unique to yourself, that even your closest family members who shared the same experience in youth, like your siblings, may not have that same worldview yeah. or that same perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like overall here in this pre-course is you really talking about the confirmation bias that humans experience. The brain is a natural pattern recognizer, and you see patterns over time throughout your life that creates your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And when things happen in media or in society that confirms that, you see that and you log that as mm-hmm. this is how things are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are your truths.
Right.
Yeah.
Your truths. Everybody's yeah. truths and lies, right? Yeah.
And so it really is hard to see what is real and not real. What is true? What is false? And so he gets into that in the chorus. He says, and in his thesis statement at the introduction,
right.
between countless truths and countless lies, are we looking at the world the proper way? It is all dirty. Can I too say I am clean?
Ooh.
And the use of like, it's all dirty. The world around us is also dirty. Like it makes me think there's a mud of lies, and it's hard to know the truths within the lies. Our own confirmation bias, it's hard for us to really see the truth if we're our whole lives looking for this. We believe this one way and have never really looked outside of that.
Right.
And, yeah, there's just so much information out there that it's really hard to know and see the world in a clear way.
Mm-hmm.
It's all dirty. And I love how he's too saying, like, I too say, like, can I say that I am clean? Like,
right.
he himself, he's like talking about it, but he's like, but truly, like, can I even say, like, I know what the truths are? I know what is right and wrong. Like, it's very muddled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, also, this is the part of the song where I feel like he sounds the most disgusted, right? And like, it's also dirty. Like, he's so disgusted with what we have become
mm-hmm.
as, you know, a civilization, with the countless truths and lies and everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to mention about the line where he says, can I too say I am clean? Like, it feels like he's acknowledging that everyone is affected by these countless truths and lies, you know,
mm-hmm.
that the world is throwing on us, that, you know, and like, it's impossible to be virtuous. It's impossible to like not inadvertently spread lies that you thought were truths from your perspective
yeah.
at that time. You know, like, I feel like everybody could look back at something that they could say that about.
Yeah.
And it's hard to know. It's hard to, like, everybody is going to be affected by this.
Everyone's affected by mm-hmm. it. Yeah and that's definitely what he's saying by like questioning himself, like, am I clean?
Right.
Can you say you're clean?
Am I part of the problem?
Right.
Yeah
this part also really made me think a lot about the social dilemma and just the take on, I don't know if you've seen that like docuseries on Netflix called The Social Dilemma,
mm-hmm.
but they talk a lot about the polarization and really the media's place and why the world has become so polarized, blowing stories out of proportion, like straight up falsifying information. And the media really can feed off of and benefit from the polarization of these different views. And so the media pins people against each other. Like,
right.
you're either on this side or that side, or, you know, they can really make someone look like a villain. And, you know, it's really terrible. And so
yeah.
It's just so really fucked up if
yeah.
you think about it.
It's super fucked up. I
yeah.
think that docuseries also talked about like how social media will continue to feed you stories within that same vein. So that is only going to contribute to your perspective and confirmation bias and worldview.
Yeah. I really think about my parents and the media that they see. I'm like, how do you not know that this is fake?
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, and they really feed off of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'm sure I see a lot of media too, that my parents are like, how do you not know that that's fake? I'm like, how am I think I'm just as guilty sometimes.
Right. I mean, this happened super recently of like the media blowing something way out of proportion, and where it was these countless truths and lies and also a distraction from something else that could have been celebrated. So I just wanted to share, you may have heard during the women's NCAA March Madness championship was LSU versus Iowa Hawkeyes. And there's these two star players, one on each team, Iowa's Caitlin Clark and LSU's Angel Reese. And Caitlin Clark is a white player. Angel Reese is a black player. And earlier in the game, Caitlin Clark had like had trash talked, had said like, you're up 15 points, shut up. Like, and she like waved her hand in front of her face, like as like a taunting thing to Angel Reese. And later on, Angel Reese hand waved her hand in front of her face, kind of back to Caitlin Clark. This is like the type of trash talk and sportsmanship that happens all the time, that people do on the court all the time. Not really crossing any lines here. It's all in competition. And what the issue was here is that the media took track of this and they were vilifying Angel Reese, of course, the black athlete from LSU, and talking about how horrible she was, how poor of a sportsman she was, and, you know, just how disrespectful she was, when Caitlin Clark had done...
She was the first to do it.
First to do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And on top of this, Caitlin Clark comes out and has to defend her competitor, saying this was all, you know, this was nothing. This was just the game, you know, like the media is totally blowing this out of proportion type of statement.
Yeah.
And what's really unfortunate is that this became like the big story of the NCAA women's championship bracket, which sucks because women deserve to be celebrated and not pit against each other, especially across like racial lines and team lines. Like it's just, it was so much of that was so unnecessary. Necessary, and it was all 100% cultivated by the media.
Yeah.
And so it was just terrible. And at the same time, the media could have been talking about the incredible story of LSU's other star player, Flajay Johnson, who this year, earlier this spring, competed on America's Got Talent with her own original rap. And
so awesome.
Was amazing. Like we could have been uplifting this star player who was also in the championship round of the bracket, but instead we're conflating and totally making up countless lies.
Yeah, but
and so many people believed it too.
I know, so many people believed it. It was totally taken out of context. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly what you get with the media. It's all taken out of context.
Right.
And you really don't know the full story, so you just have to do your own research. But super unfortunate that the media is like this. They always report on negative topics. And that, unfortunately, is what gets views or reads or whatever. And so the news, that's why I don't watch the news. My parents watch the news. I'm like, how do you do that? Because it's all so negative.
So hateful.
Yeah.
And I think like at the end of this chorus, he says like, between malicious questions and indiscriminate criticisms, what is it that we're fighting for? Mm-hmm. Like, why do we let this affect us, so many of us, so much that we as individuals in our communities, within our friend groups, within our families, you know, are fighting about these types of things?
Yeah. We really should be joining together, not fighting against each other.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. At the beginning of the second verse, he says, while some shout out about all kinds of justice with their tongue covered in blood, others silently laugh at them. In the era of everyone having something to say, keeping your opinions to yourself makes you a bystander. People dare to point their fingers at you. This is like really loaded because like, as I was kind of saying earlier in the first verse, like I tend to stand up and advocate for things, and the people who aren't are like, they really are like, wow, she's fucking delusional to think that what she's saying is going to do anything, or she's putting herself out there. Like, there's so much risk involved in that, you know, like I feel the laughter kind of behind my back, yeah, so to speak, yeah, you know, but at the same time, I truthfully believe keeping your opinions to yourself makes you a bystander. So like, how people dare to point their fingers at me, like, I could not care less, because mm-hmm, at least I'm doing something. At least I'm standing up for what I believe in. Mm-hmm. At least I'm saying it and taking action instead of just letting it and being passive. And yeah, to me, that's more important. I'd rather mm-hmm say something than nothing.
Yeah. But it seems like whether you're being a bystander, people are pointing fingers at you, or, you know, if you're being an advocate and talking, you know, really advocating for people, and then there's going to be people who are silently laughing at you. Right. So it kind of seems like there's no winning.
There's no winning.
You gotta, I mean, yeah,
you have to pick your battle, right?
Right.
Like, it's going to be strife either way, either within yourself, maybe feeling guilty for having not stood up, or maybe wishing that you had like more courageousness in that moment to have said something or whatever, mm-hmm, if it were like a situation. But like, if you're standing up, like, mm-hmm, there's a lot that comes with that too.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, and a lot of backlash that can come with that too. Like, you really can't win, mm-hmm, and it's a choice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, with Yoongi saying that there's no winning, like him talking about, I'm always losing, there's no winning. Yeah. At the end of this verse, he says, I beg you, face this uncomfortable good intention, the noise created by yellow journalism, the choice made in someone's favor. And oh my God, he like threw me all the way back to like high school AP US history with, yeah, that term yellow journalism. I was like, ooh.
Long time since you've heard that.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just sensationalist and exaggerated journalism, which I feel like we've been talking about this media polarizing and exaggerating the whole time. And here he's, if you hadn't gotten it yet, you know, he's laying it out for you. This is exactly what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And I love this last line, the choice made in someone's favor, because it is someone who's profiting off of what they're choosing, the yellow journalism that they're choosing to run. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the people that are profiting off of it. So, or the people who got the story to run, you know, how, yeah, celebrities will influence like TMZ to run this story or that story, or leak things to Insider or whatever. Like, yeah,
propaganda, yeah, man. I think about propaganda and just, it's how the media propaganda can so mold your beliefs. Mm-hmm. And it has, there's so much higher up choices that are going on, you know, the choices that what they decide to put in the media is really in someone's favor. Yeah. And to shine the spotlight on one person, or to make another person look bad, or on certain issues or topics. And it's so difficult too, to like do a lot of research and figure out really what the truth is, you know, and it's time consuming, but you have to do it. You know, mm-hmm, you really have to get to the root of what you believe to be true, what aligns with your values, but like not taking everything you see in the media just for granted, not, yeah, for granted, but like just believing
as truth,
it,
yeah,
as truth. Yeah. And I love how he ends Polar Night. He ends by saying, what is the point of fighting among ourselves? I tell you, our spearheads should be directed upwards.
Hell yeah, Minyoongi. Hell yeah. Yeah.
The higher ups, whoever's making these decisions, who's ever pinning just regular folk in society against each other and really distracting us from who is in power and kind of molding us to believe certain things or go against other people and not really knowing why, yeah, or questioning why.
Who is really, yeah, making the decisions that are affecting us? And that's where our energy should be directed at, yeah, you know? Mm-hmm. Wow. This song is incredible.
It's a great song.
I fucking love this song.
Yeah.
It's like a easily, like, I want to go back and listen to it. Like you said, it's a standout on the album the first time listening, mm-hmm, through. Like, it really stood out.
And something else that I just want to say about Polar Night is I'm such a strange enthusiast, mm-hmm, the song with RM. And I feel like this could be like a response to Strange, or like a Strange part two, because in Strange, he talks so much about like, there's this mist around us, you know, this society around us, like, why are we this way? How can we not see these things? And it's so easy to be blinded or fooled by the media and all the truths and lies that are around, mm-hmm, us. It's so dirty pretty.
Yeah.
So I really feel like this is like a response to Strange, yeah, or at least
like a continuation. Thematically,
it's a continuation of, yeah, a lot of what's talked about in Strange.
I totally agree with that. Like, mm-hmm, I feel like Strange is so like question society, ugh, and now Polar Night is like, now continue to, now, yeah, pick it apart. Yeah, totally.
Get your, point your spearheads up and like, let's do something about it.
Right. Like, he's starting to like rally us together, yeah, here at the end. The revolution's coming. So yeah, anyways, yeah, I fucking love this song. Hey Gum. Mm. That's right. Get on board. Okay, so let's talk about Interlude Dawn. So this song, just like every other song, incredibly, was produced by Auguste D and El Capitan. They were both on the keyboard for this song, and El Capitan contributed to the strings. This song is just gorgeous. Like, it sounds like the score for a movie.
Yes, it does.
It has this really passionate guitar that brings this soft ballad, like rock vibe towards the end. It harkens us back to the earlier songs of Amygdala and D-Day, kind of brings that rock vibe back into the album. Mm-hmm. And I think that this song has really great placement. When this album first came out and when we got the set list, you really pondered, like, that's so late in the album for an interlude.
Yeah.
Interesting that the interlude comes so towards the end, but it feels like we really needed a breather after the heavy hitting topics of Amygdala, SDL, People Part Two, and Polar Night. Like, that's a lot back to back.
It is a lot back to back. Lots to think about. So this, yeah, definitely gives you a breather. It gives you time to collect your thoughts and move on into the last part, yeah, of this album.
Definitely.
I do just really want to say, like, it's gorgeous. I feel like for an interlude, how can it be one of my favorite songs? You know, like, it's all instrumental, but it is so beautiful. It really, mm-hmm, does sound like score music. And I think it transitions us so beautifully into Snooze. So Snooze is next on the album, and it features Ryushi Sakamoto and has Woo Sung of The Rose on it. So the production for this song, it's still Auguste, El Capitan, and then Ryushi Sakamoto and Kim Woo Sung. I really briefly want to talk about Ryushi Sakamoto because we did see him in the documentary Road, mm-hmm, to D-Day. And for both of us, it was one of our favorite parts of the entire documentary. It is just this really beautiful moment with Yoongi meeting one of his like all-time favorite musicians. And if you don't know him, Ryushi Sakamoto, he was a Japanese composer, record producer, and actor who pursued a diverse range of styles as a solo artist and also as a member of Yellow Magic Orchestra. And he really influenced and pioneered a number of electronic music genres. And so it's just, he's written a lot of score music too. So coming off of Interlude Dawn, you know, you hear those strings, you hear a lot of that like classic score composition, mm-hmm, in it, which I'm like, Yoongi is, yeah, so talented.
Yeah.
But it just transitions so beautifully into Snooze, where you hear Ryushi Sakamoto's piano playing and a lot of that influence that he had on this song too.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I love when they met, Yoongi saying that he wrote this song with Mr. Sakamoto's music in mind, you, mm-hmm, know, and how he wanted to be able to convey that same level of emotion. I love that he was looking up to his composer idol in, yeah, such a way.
Yeah.
And I feel like really able to do so. Like, this is a very passionate song.
It is.
Dulce gave us some insight from Suga's V Live also, saying that he sees this track as sharing some characteristics with two of his previous songs, So Far Away and Dear My Friend, which we totally see also. Mm-hmm. Like, we felt the Dear My Friend vibes just from the balladness, and also it feels like a letter. It feels very personal and intimate when he's telling us, and the lyrics are more straightforward. It's not, you're not reading in between the lines to interpret or trying to find like multiple layers of meaning here. Mm-hmm. He's really telling us exactly the message he wants to convey, which is very Dear My Friend.
Yes.
And he also is someone who knows so well about the tough times and his suffering. suffering. So this song is really for the artists who are up on the up and coming track of their careers and working hard and putting in the hours, the blood, sweat, and tears. This song is for them. This mm-hmm. song is to help them keep dreaming, help them like ignite their passions, but also know that it's okay to rest and take care of yourself.
Definitely the main message.
The main message. Yeah. He says he's dedicating this song to everyone in this world who survives on snoozes, sleeping in snippets, and striving to fulfill their dreams. So yeah. Lovely, amazing. And it's so heartfelt when it comes through here in the song.
It really is. This song, production-wise, really reminds me so much of First Love. And with how the song and Yoongi's rap intensifies right at the end of the snooze reminds me so much of First Love. Also feels a little bit like Intro Nevermind in a way too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of callback. Yeah. I feel, and the fact that he's talking to these younger artists who look up to him, you know, I think he really reflected on himself during that time when he was a young artist. And so First Love and Intro Nevermind was really during that time where he was really grinding.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was living off of snoozes.
Oh, totally. I feel like that's a major reason why we feel the First Love vibe so much. That build that First Love distinctly has and the need to get your message across that it has, I feel like really comes across here. Yeah. But also, when I first heard the song, first time listening through, I was like, when he got to the bridge, I was like, I've heard this before. I know what this is from. Yes. This is it's from something on D1. Like, I have to go back and listen.
All of ARMY's like their backs completely straightened. Like, hold up. Wait, I know this.
Yeah. So this, he has lines that are lyrically and rhythmically reflecting lines from August D, and it is Interlude Reality Dream and then So Far Away.
Oh yeah.
So in the Interlude Reality Dream, he first is just saying dream with the dead space in between, but he says the dream on the same rhythm he delivers it here in this song. And in So Far Away, which is the next song on that album, he brings that dream rhythm back and then he raps in between it exactly like he does on this song. So talk about bringing it full circle. Talk about
really full circle.
Himself back to how he felt in those times when he was really grinding and the type of what he would want to say to himself, what he wished somebody would have said to him or supported him is what he's doing here now.
We just really quickly want to talk about Woosung's voice before we get into the lyrics, because you can feel the empathy in his voice so much in this song. Like, it's like he's acknowledging your pain but also bringing comfort to you. It reminds me much of like a mother, like if a child is in a lot of pain, a mother acknowledging that pain and feeling that kind of sorrow and empathy for her child but also comforting her child at the same time. And you know, I just really get that from Woosung's voice, and it's very much in tune with the message of the song too. Gorgeous piano that plays throughout the song. Steady, mild beat with some strings in it too, of course. It's a really, really beautifully composed song.
Yeah, just so amazing. I mean, if you haven't watched The Road to D-Day yet, you need to watch a live performance. Like, Woosung's voice in the live performance is so incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So phenomenal. So let's get into the lyrics of this song. Yeah. And as we
said, we love this song so much. We're like really passionate about it.
I mean, I feel like I feel that way about all the songs in this album, but like this song really struck us. The background of him going and meeting with Mr. Sakamoto, who is like, who he had heard his music for the first time.
That was his idol.
Right. That was his idol.
He has his idol on the song where he's talking to his fans who idolize him. You know, it's just very, I don't know, all the layers.
It just makes it so meaningful. And so when we dive into the lyrics, in verse one, he says, "It could be a strenuous journey, and the path that I've walked may have looked like a flower path, but no, it's a thorny one with enemies on all sides." So he's acknowledging that it has been a tough road, and, you know, it hasn't been easy. Despite the success that you can see he has now, it hasn't, you know, come easy by far. He says, "I hope you never forget those who throw flowers onto your path for you. When you're smiling, don't ever forget those who are crying, because it's your smile who helps them live through the day. And I hear he's acknowledging the fans, mm-hmm. the ones who throw flowers on your path for you, the ones who celebrate you, yeah. and how it makes me think about how like D2 literally saved my life. And like, mm-hmm. I have cried so much to Minyoongi's music before.
We said he saved us from the pandemic.
He really did. And so, I mean,
yeah,
if him knowing, this is him knowing that I make my fans smile and that can get you through that hard day. Like, yeah. don't forget about the reason why you're doing this is mm-hmm. for the fans.
And also the people who support you. Yeah.
Yeah. Because yeah,
focus on that.
Focus on that more
than your enemies. Focus on the people who are supporting you and are throwing flowers on your path and yeah. rooting for you this
your
whole time.
Your friends, your family. Yeah. I think even more so is like what he says lower down. What is it that made you choose this painful and lonely path? Don't ever forget that reason, even after time passes. So is it because of all the love and support of your friends and family and your fans that like you're able to continue on, but also remember what made you fall in love with it in the first place yeah. and how is that going to continue to drive you?
Yeah, don't forget your why. Don't forget your reason for starting.
Yeah. yeah.
And kind of going off of that into the second verse, he really addresses your peers are made to be your enemies. He says, this place is a war zone without gunshots. The brutal yet beautiful good and evil determined by numbers. When I fail to kill someone, I become the one that dies. Why do I have to kill someone when this scene is not a boxing ring? So yeah, really looking at like the competition of like, you can't even support your other musician friends that, you know, you're all pitted against each other, but like you're creating art. Why is art this competition? Also really makes me think of just the K-pop industry to a degree too, you know, like those survival shows and, you know, you become real good friends with these people. You all have the same passion, but you're put into a position where you have to be nasty, you yeah. know, you have to be all about yourself and it's almost like you're having to put the other people down and it's this very competitive scene and it's not pretty. It's a war zone without gunshots.
Yeah, a culture of competition determined by numbers here. When he says determined by numbers, that mm-hmm. stands out because it's like all the charts, you know,
the sales,
all that, you know, and whoever can get highest on the charts, whoever has the most sales, like, yeah. well, then they're definitively the best. And it really should not be, to go back to Polar Night, it really should not be that black and white.
Yeah.
It's not just who's at the top. Clearly they're the best. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we've seen BTS at the top and we're like, yes, they're the best. Of course they're the best, but we don't need them to be at the top for us to believe and to know that they're the best, that they make incredible art and music. Mm-hmm. You know, it shouldn't be about the numbers, but yet this competition is driven by it, you know, ruthlessly.
Yeah.
yeah. He goes on to say in verse 2, I hope you never laugh at someone else's misfortune because you never know if you'll find yourself in the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
This is making me think about karma in D-Day mm-hmm. and just how what you put out is what you're going to get back.
Yeah.
And this industry, I mean, if he's definitely talking about the industry, it's ruthless. And if you are going to celebrate someone else's failures, like you're going to have that many haters too, and they're going to celebrate your failures too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very humbling reminder mm-hmm. and a great way to be like, hey, you need to be kind. You always need to be kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then he goes on to say, just laugh out loud as if you'll laugh the world away. And this is, to me, this is that sarcastic August D laugh, that mm-hmm. that chuckle of like a indifference.
The give it to me,
right. What'd you say?
The give it to me.
The
Yoongi.
Give it to me. Right. I mean, he did it. I mean, we just saw it in Amygdala too. It really is that like, you can't fucking change it. Like, yeah. it's that all you can do is laugh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is so ridiculous. All you can do is yeah. laugh at how obnoxious it is.
Yeah. yeah. It reminds me a little bit in Road to D-Day, too, where he's like, why am I so obsessed? You know, why am I so obsessed with music? And he goes and punches the couch, but yeah. he's like laughing at himself.
Yeah. Because he's like, I can't help it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the post-chorus of this song is where we have a real strong change-up in the music. The instrumental starts to drop a little bit, and you just hear him say 16 times, it's all going to be all right. It's all going to be all right. It's all going to be all right. He says it over and over, and it's very calming, very much like a mantra, an affirmation of, like, through all of this stress, through, you know, all of your hard work that you're doing, in the end, it's all going to be okay. And he's just really, it's very comforting. It's very meditative how he sings it here at this part of the song. And that's when he goes into the bridge.
Yeah.
And he says, dream. I hope it to be there with you at your creation and at the end of your life. Dream. I hope it to be generous to you whenever you stand. There's also a translation that says that I hope you always be generous. Mm-hmm. He says, dream. I hope it to be in full bloom eventually at the end of hardships. Dream. The beginnings will seem humble. So prosperous will the future be. Dream. And so I love that this is that interlude reality dream and the so far away reference where he's doing the dream. Mm. But in between here, he's really giving his like final remarks. I feel like his final pieces of advice to the up and coming artists, you know, the people who are working really hard right now, saying like, your creation, I hope that it succeeds. You know, it might be tough at the beginning, but it could be really great. Remember to always be kind and generous, even to the people who are trying to make your enemies, you know, always be kind.
Right.
And he really says that I'm going to be with you until the end.
Yeah.
And I hope that you will be prosperous in the future.
Yeah.
And I hope your dream comes true.
Yeah. And him saying like, I hope you bloom like a lotus flower. Like, this is getting us back to the first half of the album again here too. And this like mention of the dream just makes me think about what he had said in the Road to D-Day about his new dream and the shared dream that him and Mr. Sakamoto almost have, where he had said that he wanted to be at one point a scholar and to study musical cultures all over the world, and how Yoongi has said his new dream is to go and collaborate with local up and coming artists and their, you know, using their local instruments all over the world.
Yeah.
So I love that Yoongi is still dreaming. We know he's still dreaming. That's been such a theme of his. And I love that he's encouraging, as his like kind of final words in this dedication to young artists, that they can continue to dream no matter what throughout it all.
Yeah. Okay, so we saved it here for the very end, but we've had a refrain throughout the entire song. But here at the end, he sings the refrain one more time, but this is where it gives that first love vibe, because this refrain, he really sings it. He raps it so passionately and so intensely. You wouldn't think that it would be the same refrain that he's been doing the whole time, because it's so different. But he says, behind you, growing a dream while watching me, I'll always be standing, so don't worry too much. If you're afraid of falling, I'll gladly catch you. So don't suffer like I did. You, surviving on snoozes to get closer to your dream, it's okay to rest. Today, at least, don't even dream. When you silently show me a faint smile, only then I feel a little relieved. And this is the main message of the whole song. I really love how he's singling out, he's pointing to the people who look up to him, who are working so hard right now, and saying, hey, I know you're surviving on snoozes, and I'm telling you, like, it's okay to rest. It's okay to sleep. Like, I don't want you to go through the pain that I went through. You know, like, it's going to be okay.
Mm.
Even stop dreaming, like, for just a little bit, you
know.
Get your sleep, rest. You deserve rest.
And take care of yourself.
Smile. Smile. Like, even if you show this faintest smile, he then can feel a little bit relieved.
It's a powerful final message, especially in his delivery here. You know, it's like the last bit of advice from the bridge of continuing to dream, he's like, but not without making sure that you rest. Like, final reminder.
It seems like Yoongi, that's like one of maybe Yoongi's regrets, is that he didn't even let himself sleep. Like, he didn't. He worked so hard and tirelessly for so long that he doesn't want other people to feel like they have to go through all that too.
Right.
And so he's saying, hey, I'm here for you and I'll stand by you until you achieve your dreams.
Yeah.
So please rest.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Min Yoongi.
It's very comforting.
It's so comforting.
I love how you said, like, you wish that he would have had this song, that someone could have told this to him, you know.
That's how I feel, you know. I feel like everybody has that moment in their life, or these themes in their lives, that they wish someone could have advised them on. If mm-hmm. they could have gone back, they could have told their younger self, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is what that is for him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a very passionate message from him. I love this song. It's one of my, like, top three on the album.
Yeah, same here.
So let's talk about the last song on the album, Life Goes On. And I originally, when we got the set list, I was like, Life Goes On, but it's not part two. We had found out that it was his original kind of like demo of the song. And BTS took the rest of Life Goes On and completely changed the rest of it. So this is like Yoongi's original version of the song. And, you know, when we first heard it, it's like, wow, it is vastly different.
It is vastly different from the,
you know, what we know on B. Mm-hmm. So this song was, of course, produced by Gusty, El Capitan. And then there's a few others on this one. P-Dog, RM, and J-Hope are on here, along with Blush, Chris James, and Antonina Armato. So quite a few people on here, but I love seeing RM and J-Hope as well with P-Dog.
Yeah, it feels very BTS.
Yeah, so BTS. We, at the beginning, the instrumental sounds kind of like reversed at the start of the songs. It almost gives like this synthy piano chord vibe also.
It reminded me of Rain by the Beatles.
Yeah.
Because they reverse the song some. And so it sounds like this reverse of the instrumental at the beginning of the song.
Yeah.
Very neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I know it was originally a demo, but to me, it feels a little unrefined. And I don't mean that in a bad way at all. Like, it just seems a little bit more raw to me. Mm. And, you know, I could be totally wrong about that. But to me, it's not like a straight demo, obviously. Like, it's very well produced.
Right.
But it seems a little bit more uncut.
Yeah, I get that. I get that more uncut, more raw vibe.
Uh-huh.
I do feel like this version of Life Goes On has a super catchy melody. Like, this is one of the songs that I catch myself like singing to myself most often on the album.
Yeah, if I listen to it, it's stuck in my head.
I love it. I love it so much. And I love Yoongi's singing voice with it too. I think it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. And with the vibe of this song, it feels like there's like a bit of hope peeking through some somberness and like some acceptance going on as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. And there's a very empathetic vibe that Snooze also has. Like, it's very understanding of the changes and the emotions that go along with it.
Yeah. Okay. So getting into the lyrics, he starts with the intro and he says, "For some reason we've moved away, but we don't blame anyone. It's nothing between us. I said I couldn't take it off. I keep getting scared. I'm afraid we'll go away forever." And for me, especially knowing when the song is coming out of like pandemic times, when mm-hmm. the B album was being created, obviously is like BTS, and there's nothing between us saying like there's not a problem between them or a particular issue that mm-hmm. got them here. This is like the pandemic happened to them. It's not their fault what's happening to them. Him saying I couldn't take it off and afraid that we'll go away forever, I feel like it's him mentioning his fear that we know he has of stopping or slowing down, because what's that gonna mean for BTS? What's that gonna mean for him if they do?
Yeah.
And they're forced to here. So
a very real fear. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think ARMYs went through a lot of that too.
We definitely did.
Just not knowing. But of course, BTS knew before we did.
Right.
Yeah. In the first verse, he says, "I will borrow this music and give it to you. People say the world has changed. Fortunately, our relationship hasn't changed yet. Let's say goodbye, not bye. Hello." And I really just love, like, this is some of the same lyrics from his verse in Life Goes On, the actual version. You also hear the
amazing,
you know, which is in his verse of Life Goes On, but you hear it here again in his version of Life Goes On. And I particularly love the line of, "People say the world has changed," which of course, COVID pandemic, the world really did change. But he says, "Fortunately, our relationship hasn't." And it makes me think of BTS and ARMY and just BTS as brothers.
Yeah. Yes. Like, even with all of that change, there's some things that are still constant.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the pre-chorus, he says, "As time goes by, someone will be forgotten. Just do what you want. Time is like a wave. It will be washed away like the ebb. But don't forget to find me." And so to me, this really comes across as that time can heal the pain of the past that we experienced, especially like in relation to the pandemic and what we all lost during that time. But we'll find each other in the future. It's that hope that don't forget to find me. Like, we will be together again.
Yeah. It's very optimistic.
Yeah. And then in the chorus, he says, The moment where everyone stopped, the porch that looks far away today. Life goes on, life goes on. The moment when everyone fell apart, our relationship is getting farther than yesterday. Life goes on, life goes on. This is just really the vibe of the pandemic. Think about a porch, everybody there on their homes, like the most you can do is like step outside your house, basically.
Yeah.
And everybody, you know, relationship suffering, being, you know, like the time and distance between you just getting far away. But even so, life continued on.
Yeah. And I like how it still has that message of life goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's almost like this is that somber acceptance here. Like he feels a little regretful that like there is this distance and there is this time, you know, but it's also like, well, that is life.
Yeah.
And it feels like
life changes,
but it's going to be fine.
Yeah. It's just the pandemic was such a heavy hit, you know, such a drastic change.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little harder to cope with some of those emotions that go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the second verse, he says, the place where I passed for 10 years with countless wounds and glory, looking back each moment of memories, I've been running like it was the last time, but I'm still scared. I know this place right now, a place that will soon become a memory. Don't be afraid until the end of my life, because life will go on forever. I also feel like this is very optimistic too, in that like the mention of running, like, you know, BTS
yes.
has always been running, and feeling like this is the last time, like feeling like they always have to be on the go. And then he's acknowledging that like he's been through this over these past 10 years and, you know, he can know a little bit what to expect, but he's still scared. But he kind of comforts himself in this and saying like, don't be afraid, because life will go on forever.
Yeah.
You know, like this too will become a memory.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that don't worry too much.
Yeah.
Don't fear too much for the future.
Yeah. Life mm-hmm. goes on, life goes on. It's
yeah.
it's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of course after that verse, then we get that pre-chorus and that chorus again,
mm-hmm.
just reminding us that life does go on and we
yeah.
will continue on. I love this here at the end of the album. It was an unexpected still surprise, like to get this kind of like
really?
Different version
but
of Life
RM
Goes On.
But didn't RM say that it was so good that he thought it needed to be on an album too?
Yeah.
Like they were like, it's just too great of a song.
And they were totally correct. Like,
yeah.
I love the song.
I
love
do.
It as
yeah.
much as the original Life Goes On their B album. So like, I feel like
I don't
that's
know.
Amazing.
I really like Life Goes On B.
I
love
just,
both.
I'm a sucker for this melody so
yeah.
much. And just Yoongi's delivery. But like both songs are incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, this album, I mean, I would have to say my top three songs are Amygdala, D-Day, and Snooze,
mm-hmm.
in no particular order.
Yeah.
It changes every moment of
mm-hmm.
every day. You know, it's just whatever the vibe is, but I fucking love those songs. But every song on this album, I feel like, is so incredible, has its place.
Even the interlude, like,
even
I just can't get past that. It's like, what, just over a minute long,
yeah.
and it's just fantastic.
But it's so necessary. It's so
yeah.
needed. It's so needed for
yeah.
that emotional kind of release after those heavy topics.
Mm-hmm.
I also love here that it really does feel like he's wrapping up the trilogy of the Augusti albums and tying up some loose ends of some thoughts and themes that he had lyrically delivered in
mm-hmm.
Augusti and in D2.
You
so,
get a lot of that with
yeah.
D-Day.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I just think it's phenomenal. Musical genius, Min Yoongi.
Musical genius, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about Polar Night right now. I really do love Polar Night.
It really is like that continuation of Strange.
Yeah,
like,
I'm freaking obsessed with Strange, and now...
It's just one of those topics that you could talk about forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that he uses his platform to like bring attention to very important topics like in Polar Night. Polarization is a big issue.
It
and
is.
Not just an issue in the United States or an issue in South Korea, but
it's
an issue in all over the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, he talked about that same type of thing in Strange. And I think that he's talking about a systemic issue of like the industry and how it preys on young artists and Snooze. And,
yeah.
you know, he's really talking about big topics in each one of these songs. He talked about love.
And
he
talked
about
fear. And that's what Augusti has done this whole time.
Yeah.
Though. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about D1, D2, and D-Day. All three are like, all of the songs are heavy hitters, yeah. like big topics.
Vulnerability.
Yeah.
You know, the vulnerability that he shares with us.
Oh, yeah.
And just getting his perspective, I do feel like he is so wise. And so I love to see what he has to say about these things.
Yeah. So we are going to be going to his concert this coming weekend in Chicago.
Oh my God, I can't believe it.
Oh man. So guys, next week we're going to be coming back again with another episode.
We don't stop.
We haven't stopped. Yeah. But we're going to do our concert review. We're going to get to see him live. I'm so excited. We have our outfits. We're trying to avoid social media.
We don't know the set list. You know, a couple songs spoiled, but like we are trying to keep it a surprise. Yes. So we're so excited. And yeah, we can't wait to talk to you guys about that and share our album or our concert experience there. We really hope that you enjoyed part two of our D-Day album review. We're really interested in your thoughts on these songs. Yeah. So you can reach out to us, comment on our posts, or reach out to us via social DM. Of course, come to the Iconic Hangout whenever we have it on one of our free Mondays. We'll try to find one soon. Yeah. And then we can all disseminate on all of these amazing songs together.
I still can't believe we've done like 2.5 hours of this review.
Literally.
Like between the two, part one and part two.
I know.
So much to say.
I know. Thank God for two part episodes.
I know, guys. We have so much to say.
Yeah, but we really love this album and we hope that you do too. You can let us know what you thought about the album review and the album itself, mm-hmm. you know, in all of those places. And of course, put your sunscreen on. It's Skin Cancer Awareness Month. And like always, we do want to thank our supporters on Patreon, especially our VIP Iconics, VIP Iconic Care Pack. Just coming soon to Eileen, Michelle, Holly, Meg, Rachel, and Robin. Thank you guys so much for your support. We love you so much. And you can find links for all of those things in the description.
Thanks for listening and thanks for stanning BTS.